Environment and Land Use. And I think what we'll do is start at the bottom and go back up. So we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3637. We have three people to speak, Paul and Phil Hatch. I think is there one other? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, you weren't suggesting that starting with Paul Romaine and starting at the bottom, were you? Is there anything in that suggestion at all?
Are you looking
that
for
cost
help?
You something, Mitch, and I don't know what.
Not from Paul, is it?
Yeah. Our administrator has left us.
The 3637
committee actually deals with allowing disposal of source separated cullet at a disposal site.
Yes, no. Mr. Chair.
Welcome
back.
Yeah,
and Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for your edification, cullet is broken or waste glass suitable for remelting or recycling. And under current law, which is Oregon Revised Statute 459A.080(3), the mixing of that with of source-separated recyclable material with solid waste in any vehicle, box, container, or receptacle used in solid waste collection or disposal is prohibited. Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Romaine.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. With me at the table, to my left, your right, is Phil Hatch. He's from Bend and has Haynes Distributing Company over there, beer and wine distributor, and in addition, a recycling company that does glass recycling and bottle bill recycling for other distributors. And to my right is John Fletcher from Container Recovery, which is the largest recycler basically in the state. They're based out of Portland. They do the five counties, I believe, and then some contractual relationships with some others. They can provide some technical expertise for you. Thanks for the opportunity to speak on House Bill 3637, and the bill is not as sinister as some would make it out to be. Under the bottle bill, we take back an enormous quantity of recyclable materials. The theory behind the bottle bill, if you remember, there were two theories. One is to use the bottle bill to collect litter, basically get the things off the street. And the second thing was to use this material again, either as refilled containers or break down and reuse the containers. The market has changed considerably since the bottle bill first went into effect back in 1972, and now you have at least in the beer business, you have very, very few in effect, refilled containers. So the glass basically is broken down. Our problem right now, and it's been a problem for a while, is there is no market for the glass. There are uses of the glass is very limited. We would love to be able to come to you and say, create the markets. We would love to be able to reuse this material over and over again. But when there are no markets for the glass, the question comes to us, what the blazes do we do with this? Let me read from a Medford Mail Tribune article of April 15, and it basically says that the article says, several cities give up on glass. Recycling service continues in Medford, but on new schedule. With the market for recycled container glass in a slump, some Oregon cities are dropping glass recycling from curbside programs. Officials say it is more difficult to recycle the glass, the material is troublesome to collect, expensive to haul, and bottle makers have consolidated operations across the country, et cetera, et cetera. This is not just a problem with the bottle bill, it's a whole problem with glass. What do we do with it? There's a little bit of confusion over what we can do with the glass today. Obviously, we can send it back to glass reprocessors, people who make, like Owens, Illinois, and others who make it, and that's a great thing to do with it. But right now, if there is no market for the glass, the question comes in, what can we do with it? And we get sort of conflicting views out of DEQ. We would like to be able to use it in roadbeds. We would like to be able to use it as fill material in non-disposal sites. For example, if somebody wants to level a piece of property, there's a hole in the property or whatever, we'd like to be able to offer this kind of material up crushed as a way to use it. It's not a reuse of the product. It's not going to become a glass container again, but at least it's a use of the product. Landfill disposal allows this. It's actually a very good thing to put into landfills. It can be used as a daily cover. You know, landfills have to cover, and it's one of the things we can do with it. I'm going to let the two up here with me talk a little bit about their particular areas, one from rural, one from the city, one with a huge amount of glass and one with glass that he has absolutely no idea what to do with, and give you a little bit of feel for the problem. Phil, do you want to talk a little bit about just what's happening out in Central Oregon?
Well, in Eastern Oregon, we have...
you have to identify yourself.
Oh, excuse me. Phil Hatch, owner of Haynes Distributing in Central Oregon Recycling in Bend, Oregon.
Thank you.
We have different problems than what they have on the west side of the mountains, in that we're so far from the market. And that market is not very good for any return of revenue, and it's tenuous at best if it's going to continue. And the problem we have currently is that some of the glass we get in is contaminated, which means the colors are mixed, and Owens Broccoli will not take that glass. So then what do we do with it? Some parts of Eastern Oregon, this glass is just building up out in mountains, out in fields. Some is getting hauled to disposal sites. We currently haul it to the not landfill there in Deschutes County. And, of course, there's a charge for doing those things. Here about 3 years ago, we tried to, a fellow we knew was filling a hole for his business, and we asked him if we could dump some of the crushed glass into this hole to fulfill. And he said, sure. Well, somebody from DEQ came by and noticed it, and we had to go back and clean that all out at quite a bit of expense to the owner and ourselves. And fortunately, we were able to avoid a ticket because we weren't aware of how the law was written. And but that's what's kind of brought this to a head as we go further and further down the road here, and the market for this glass evaporates, and then there's more and more of this material. What do we do with it? Because it's our options are getting limited more and more all the time.
John, you want
to? Sure. Good morning, Chairman Garrard and the other committee members. My name is John Pletcher. I am president of Container Recovery in Portland. We were formed in 1987 as a member-owned co-op to deal exclusively with bottle-built containers. Glass represents about 20%. Excuse me. If it sounds like I'm choking up, it's not emotion. I'm getting over a cold. Glass represents about 20% of our volume. In 2002, we generated 69 million pounds of glass in our plant. In DEQ language, that's 34,500 tons. My concern comes from a little bit different. We are very lucky as we have a plant in Portland that is currently operating. How long that will last is anybody's guess. It's been rumored for years that that plant might get shuttered. If it does, I shudder at what we're going to do with 69 million pounds of glass, because we don't have any, there's no ability for us to get rid of that stuff. It's, glass is an expensive item to haul, 8 cents a mile it costs us to haul it. Thank God we only have a 28 mile round trip to Owens Broccoli. But you're looking at anything over probably 150 miles one way.
8 cents a mile per ton?
Eight cents a mile per truck cost just to get it. Yeah.
So however much is in the truck.
Right, right, yeah. And it just, it becomes a very large concern of ours. And the way that the law is written today and the statute is written today, we have virtually no alternatives. And I think that needs to be looked at. The glass market has been stable for the last 15 years. We've had a couple of price adjustments, and they've all gone down, but it, still we've had an opportunity to get rid of it. We just don't know how long that's going to last.
Mr. Chair, the bill that you have before you is probably not perfect. It basically just allows us to landfill as one of the options. what we would consider and what we're really looking for is the ability to have choices, and we would even go for a hierarchy of choices. In other words, our first priority on this stuff is to reuse it, if there is a market for it. We then would want to be able to put it into roadbeds or use it to fill holes. One of the things in other states it's actually used, and it's used as a cover over utilities. For example, when you bury utility lines, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll put a layer of glass above the utility line so that when you dig down, contractors digging down or homeowners digging down, and they hit glass, they know that something's below that to be careful. There are different uses for it that at best are questionable and probably are prohibited today under DEQ rules. What we would like to do, because of the lateness of the session, is to get this bill over to the Senate in its current form. And what we will pledge to you is that we will work with, and you all know the Senate, we will have to work with everybody to try and get a reasonable situation where we can, in effect, have a priority of what we have to do with the glass when the market, in effect, goes south. You can't basically mandate that we take this stuff and keep it when we can't do anything with it. We've got to have ways to get rid of it, preferably reuse or use it in some useful purpose, but we just can't be the glass storage facility for the state of Oregon. Be happy to answer any questions, and we can give you numbers on, you know, what it costs right now to haul, what it costs to what we get for it. John, and I'm sure, can come up with all that stuff, so at least I'll put them on the hook.
For clarification purpose, on the 8 cents a mile, it's actually, I misread that, but if you're going to use it, if you're going to look at that on a per ton basis, it's $2.26 a ton it costs for just our transportation costs.
That sounds more like it.
Representative Greenberg?
Thank you, sir. The issue of separating glass at the home site is of interest to me, and it was mentioned as a Central Oregon problem. For some reason, the haulers in Portland switched in the last year, at least mine did, from requiring it separated to mixing it. Does that create a special problem, and would it be useful to try and do something about that as an issue?
We actually separate crushed glass in our plant. We were able to do that, or I guess you could say mandated to do it, because of the volumes that we're bringing in. But it's not a cheap fix. We're in just under $400,000 in equipment to do that. That just doesn't pencil out when you get outside of a Portland metro area.
So if I may follow up, just so in the Portland area, it's not a problem of mixing the glass because you're prepared to deal with that.
Yes, we deal with that at our plant.
If I might, Mr. Chair, one of the problems are, you know, the machines that take back the glass and the bottle bill machines, they don't distinguish between a brown glass, a clear glass, a green glass, a blue glass, whatever it is. If it's bottle bill, it goes in, it's crushed. And then your your distributor in the rural areas takes that back, has absolutely no ability whatsoever to separate that. So you have all of a sudden contaminated glass. My understanding is that the market exists for what, the brown and the clear, because you can mix clear with brown, but there is no market for green glass. There is no market for blue glass, if you would. They're just, you can't do anything with it. And when it's contaminated, in other words, if you have green with the brown, it's worthless.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Romaine, I'd like to just understand the basis for why we had this problem to begin with. Is it that the DEQ has felt that it would be in the best interest of conservation that glass be recycled and not be put into a dump? I mean, what created this problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, I wouldn't put the problem on DEQ. It's DEQ simply administers the law that you all pass. And the law, as I read it, although I could probably come up with a different interpretation, every lawyer is capable of coming up with a different interpretation of a law. The law basically says that, the current law says that you, in effect, you can't mix source separated recyclable material with solid waste. It says in any vehicle, box, container, or receptacle used in solid waste collection or disposal. It doesn't say you can't mix it at the landfill. And in fact, Legislative Council advised us when they were preparing this legislation that they thought that possibly DEQ had gone a little bit beyond their authority. But it's questionable. I could make an argument in favor of DEQ's interpretation. The policy of this state has been to reuse the material. And it's a good policy. Don't disagree with that. DEQ's been reasonable to deal with in this. They pretty much take their mandate from the legislature. And what we're asking for is you to broaden their mandate for them to, in effect, look at other things that we can possibly do with this stuff besides simply keeping it separate and trying to get rid of it somewhere. Right now, I don't know if you picked up just some of the little stuff in the testimony, there's a lot of illegal dumping going on. There are a lot of stores, especially in rural areas, where the glass comes in, it goes in, basically the nickel gets exchanged, the grocer gets the nickel, and the stuff goes into a dumpster, and it's hauled off, and everybody goes, I don't know what's happening, but what are you going to do with it if you don't have a way to get rid of it?
And we do have Bob Dankel, the DEQ, here, and we'll have Bob come up in just a moment. So, is there any further questions for this panel? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We could have Bob Dankel and Doug Myers. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Bob Danker with the Department of Environmental Quality. The department opposes this bill. We appreciate the cooperation that we've had amongst all the parties, including the distributors who came with Paul today, local governments, the garbage haulers. Recycling really is a system, and it takes the support of everybody in the system to make it work. And obviously in Oregon, recycling has worked over the years. I've dealt with recycling issues here at the legislature for 15 years, and to be candid, the bill as written is probably the worst bill for recycling that I've seen in those 15 years. And I'll tell you why. The recycling depends on the public's trust, and meaning that when the public goes through the effort to recycle, they want to be assured that what they're going the effort for is actually recycled. This bill would allow what the public has taken the trouble to recycle to be dumped with the garbage. As soon as that happens, a lot of the public's going to say, why am I recycling if it's just going to end up in the garbage? So on its face, it's a bad bill. Now, Paul's correct. There are market problems with glass. There has been over time. And I think the people involved with the system have worked really hard to try to address that. There are markets for glass. The question is cost. Primarily, glass goes to making new containers or making fiberglass. The problem with the new containers is, of course, Owens Brockway deals with only brown glass. They never used to, but now they deal with only brown glass, which is okay for the bottle bill system and beer bottles, because beer bottles are almost all brown. What has happened over the years, just recently, is with these what we call reverse vending machines, where we used to take the bottles back to the store, they'd sort by color, and there was really good markets for that. In fact, brown glass, I believe Owens Brockway pays $45 a ton for brown glass, far exceeding the cost of transportation. What has happened just recently, the last few years, is instead of having brown glass, green glass, and clear glass, The public brings it back to the stores. They go into the machines, and all that glass is put together. So even though most of the beer bottles are brown, there's enough green glass in it to contaminate it, and it can't go to Owens Brockway. So what has to happen to it? It's shipped to California to make fiberglass. There's a market for it that just costs now. And so what has happened is we've taken a good market for glass, contaminated the glass with putting the colors together, and now we have to pay to get rid of it. Not pay too much, but pay. And that's too bad. It'd be great that we could get paid for recycling. There are lots of things involved with this issue that we could go into today. The reverse vending machines, of course, the curbside recycling of glass that was mentioned in Southern Oregon. We've worked with the communities down there and with the local governments, and we approve the local governments down there switching what they collect at the curb to maximize total recovery. The opportunity to recycle glass is still available down there at depots, but now instead of recycling glass on the curb, they're recycling scrap paper and yard debris and other things that actually brings in more tonnage, and they've increased their total recovery rates, and we think that's a good thing. As to other uses besides the best uses, which are the containers and the fiberglass, road beds, glass goes into road beds. In fact, the Bend Bypass from Bend, and Mr. Hatch's glass probably went into the road base for the Bend Bypass when they built that 3 or 4 years ago. So it's not, DEQ is not saying you can't use glass in other beneficial uses. What we are saying is what we think the law says, what we think our administrative rules say that were adopted by our commission. It says that you cannot dispose of recycled materials in with the garbage. And I think when all said and done, that's what the public expects and what the public would expect us to do, not allow the glass that they take for separate for recycling to allow that to go in with the garbage.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob, is there any way this bill could be amended to make it acceptable to the department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I don't think the bill is necessary. I'd have to, of course, we're willing to talk with Paul and others about amendments and so on, but I really don't think it's necessary at this point.
Question? Thanks.
Representative Gaynor?
Oh, I was going to wait in line. Bob, I don't think there's anybody more committed to recycling than I am in this building, although I'm sure there might be 80 others tied with me, but the question is, what's the solution? I think they have brought a real problem, and that problem is that it's not economically feasible to do what we're asking to do. So, I mean, would the proposal be to put some general funds into or some local tax funds into supporting it? I mean, it seems to me if we have a problem that they literally can't get rid of a material that has been gathered in good faith, we need to find a solution to that problem. I mean, it's not just have them store it in their backyard for all this time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenberg, I totally agree. And we've been trying to be part of that discussion and part of that solution. And I think in rural Oregon, where really what we're talking about the problem, it may cost $30 or $40 a ton to dispose of the glass if you landfill it. It'll cost probably still less than that if you ship it to Portland for shipping to California for fiberglass. So it doesn't cost more than disposing with the garbage. What I think they would like is even a less expensive solution than that, and that's where you get into the rural areas, the other uses, the road beds and pipe beddings and so on, and that really is a local team approach, I would say. Deschutes County, for instance, the Public Works Director there, Tim Shemke, we've had many conversations with him about how they can use the glass in road beds in Deschutes County and how they're developing a system where they can crush the glass with rock and so therefore it can be put to a beneficial use. I think those solutions are really the way to go, and a statewide law isn't going to facilitate those solutions. I think it's just everyone committed to finding the solutions.
Let me follow, sir.
Follow.
Is it true that it's your position, though, that the use of mix Coolis in as clean fill in a construction project, say, is not an appropriate use?
Mr. Chair, if it's agreeing, like, that one I'd have to go back and talk. I'm not. I know that roadbed is a use that I think makes sense, and I think that many of the rural communities are going that direction. I think pipe bedding makes sense. We've even encouraged use in septic tanks and drain fields using glass there. You know, so we're pushing that now. Now, if the question is dumping it in a hole and filling up a hole that maybe needs to be filled, is that maybe going too far? I don't think we have to go there. I think that we can get better uses than that. I think in rural areas, the roadbeds, the pipe beddings, the drain fields, I think we can go there and not try to start thinking about in landfills, in with the garbage, or even just filling a hole out back. I don't think that's what the public looks to when they want to think about recycling the materials that they've taken the effort to recycle.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Chair, I saw some heads shake back there when you were throwing figures around, maybe we could have some comments later about the $45 a ton and some other things, some other statistics that you've quoted. So hopefully we could get Romain up and those people.
We'll get Paul up, but first I'll hear Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm sorry I didn't sign up on the sheet, but I'm supposed to be in two other hearings as we speak. Also.
Sorry, we misspelled your name on it anyway.
Happens. I am Doug Myers. I'm representing the Association of Oregon Recyclers, which are about 400 people and corporations, a lot of local government folks. These are the people that actually do the recycling. AOR put a lot of effort into educating the public as to the value and exactly how to recycle, along with local governments. And a lot of education went into this, a lot of encouragement as to the value of recycling. Let me tell you a personal story. During the 80s, my wife and I lived in Grant Park, just west of Grant High School. And some folks on that block had lived there since literally the 1910s. And they lived through the Depression, they lived through the Second World War. They knew the value of recycling, and these older folks recycled, put it out every day. Across the street from us was a young couple. They understood, from growing up in the 60s, the value of recycling, and they made the effort to learn how to do it. Then there was my wife and I, sort of in between, and it was literally what you learned from the television, the radio, and the newspapers as to the value and how-to of recycling. And then it was quite literally peer pressure of my neighbors who put their stuff out in great detail and a lot of effort. And we, being good neighbors, said, okay, and we learned how to do it. You know, our little dog, we had maybe one or two dog food cans a week, but when they take the label off and do all the rest of the stuff you had to do. And it was an effort, and we've kept it up. We now live in Salem. And in Salem, we have these big blue cans where everything goes except for glass. And we still use the little container for glass. If people take the effort, and I want to just echo why AOR is opposed to the bill. If people take the effort to get out there and recycle, learn how to do it, it's not easy. This bill would sort of say to them, why do it? And we're afraid it would have a spillover effect on all sorts of other recycling. If you know your glass is just going to go into the garbage, which is what this bill says, why go to the effort of doing it? And so that's why we're opposed to the bill. Thank you.
Any questions?
Yes, sir, I do. It's very much the same question. We need, in order to have recycling, we need to have something at the end of the line. And do you sense that there's a significant enough problem at the end of the line on the glass situation that we need to change whatever's going on? Or are you quite comfortable that you and your neighbors at Grant Park and me and my kids can recycle and there's something that's going to be able to be done with it?
No, I am not, Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlee, I am not that familiar with the problems at the end of the line. You'd have to get somebody in here from AOR that really does it every day to do it, to give you some good information. Just an added, one of the greatest champions of recycling in this building that I've ever seen is Leslie Lewis, who is now a Yamhill County Commissioner. Very conservative, and you know what? She considered recycling a conservative value. And I have to tell you, I feel that same way myself. And these older folks on my block in Grant Park, a lot of them more conservative than my wife and I, they consider it a conservative value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all.
Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question, but I just wanted to share with you that I went to a hardware store in my neighborhood to buy a new garbage can recently, and the proprietor, person who was helping me, as we were looking at various garbage cans, and you pay different rates depending on the size of the can, told me that he and his wife, it's really similar to Doug's story, that they were just very proud of the fact that they had one very small bag of garbage every week and that everything else went into the recycling. So I know what you're saying is very true, that people take real pride, and this was also an older person who was saying that. So,
Representative
Mr. Chair, I recycle in Woodburn, and we do, and we have our baskets. And my question is, if this law is passed, who's going to know that they now shouldn't recycle unless we run ads saying we passed the law and now you don't have to recycle and you don't have to be conscious of what you've done in the past? I don't quite follow that logic, you know, unless we really did a lot of advertising on it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zahner, I think newspapers like the Statesman Journal would pick up instantly on that, and because it would make a good story. You might get somebody down here from television stations, of which Salem does not have one. But it would be, if this law passed, it doesn't just apply to Marion County, it applies statewide. And you would have, I would think, it would be a good photo op for a television station to show a big thing backing up into the landfill. And the audio would be great for radio and television both, all the clanking of glass as it hits them along with the garbage. I think that would be an easy thing to do.
Doug, let me ask a question, too. On the recycling end of things, a lot of counties, and I know mine in particular, is closing their landfill because of DEQ regulations and the costs of putting in the visqueen, which is a poor name for it, I know, but they're putting them on trains and shipping them out. And maybe the question is should be aimed more at you, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
you owe me that. That's not really affecting the glass that's hauled out of state, so to speak.
Mr. Chair, the recycled materials are handled separately and kind of go a different direction than the garbage. So, like in your case, federal regulations, by the way, require the liners, but we have adopted those federal regulations. Your solid waste may be going, you know, up to Klickitat County or wherever it's chosen to go in the state of Washington or even in the states in the state of Oregon. Your recycled materials are going to go a different direction. They're not tied.
Representative McElroy.
Doesn't this bill really represent a market-based solution in that recyclers are going to do what's best in their economic interest? If the markets develop, they're not going to go to the landfill. If the markets aren't there, they're going to go to the landfill. What's wrong with giving them that option and let the market work this thing out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I'll ask that, and Doug may have his own angle on it. I think you're correct. I think this then becomes very clearly a market-based solution, although everybody's situation is different, everybody's circumstances are different, and the market, I guess, in something like this really hard to define. But I think you're correct. It, all of a sudden, it becomes who determines the market and who determines if it's more economical to do this, and if it's left to just the distributor, the beer and pop distributor in this case under the bottle bill. If it's left to them, you'll have some distributors around the state landfilling it and putting in it with the garbage, and you'll have other distributors trying to recycle it for economic reasons. You may have then distributors working out deals with stores where the stores may just put it into their dumpster as the garbage, and pretty soon, I think, as soon as the public sees that, they're just not going to do it. And even though if it's just, it may be here and there, I think Doug's right. Right now, it's the public looks at this, and there's no doubt in their minds that when they make the effort to take a container back to the store for recycling under the bottle bill, or if they put it out on the curb, there's no doubt in their mind that it's going to be recycled. We get calls over the years, so-and-so garbage hauler may have mixed the recyclables in with the garbage, and it's a big deal. Of course, that usually wasn't the case. It didn't happen that way. They just thought it did. Public's just right now they think their containers that get recycled, and to Doug's example of the truck dumping it in with the garbage, I think the public would really be appalled at that. I don't think that's why they recycle. They don't recycle for the market base part of it. They recycle because it's the right thing to do.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenlee?
Yeah, I am perplexed at this bill. This bill would not allow anybody to put it into the dumpster, right? I mean, that's not a part of this bill. This bill only allows the direct disposal of the cullet into a site, so that the mixed source and waste in any vehicle is still not allowed under this amendment. I think recycling, is a really, it's a very conservative thing, and it feels very good to me. I mean, there are three things I like to do, two of which a lot of other people like doing. I love putting out my recycling each week. I love voting, and I like paying my taxes. I find that a civic responsibility.
Representative Greenlee, you're out of order.
And when I send that in, I think that's a part of my citizenship responsibility, and I feel very good about it. I don't pay any more than I have to, but I... But when I put out my recycling, there's a bunch of stuff there. There's the Rice Krispie carton and this bag, and there's... I throw metal screws and bolts in because I assume there's a market for it, and I put aluminum cans and a variety of things, and it's my understanding of the system is that not every one of those is equally popular, is equally economic to recycle, and that the assumption is that cardboard and paper and metal and a variety of things will provide more money to make up for the cost of disposing of things in there that make less money, but I never believe that every one of those things that I put in those recycling things diligently is going to be used. And my assumption is some of it are going to be recycled, some of it something else is going to happen to, some of it we're going to pay to dispose of in some other way. The assumptions about glass recycling, I think, were important in those original assumptions as a part of the economic equation that allows all this to happen, and that allows the recycling business to be at least self-sufficient. Sometimes, though, this is going to break down. And sometimes that the cost of disposing some pieces because of the market is going to be more than the profit of recycling other pieces. And it seems to me that reality should not be a surprise to any of us. And I wonder whether you can't be working on the Senate floor, there's obviously not time to do it here, in the Senate committees, to create that hierarchy that will ultimately allow, if there's no other real alternative, the disposal directly into a site of crushed cullet, which is still better than throwing the bottles in, I think. Is that seem feasible to you?
Mr. Chair,
I think I lost my question in the meandering statement. But
I know where you're going. It's perhaps feasible. I'm not sure that's where we should go. I don't think it's feasible in the next couple weeks or whatever to do something like that. You're talking a major policy change to you know, set up a very elaborate system to determine let's when we can landfill and when we can't. So I'm not sure that now is the time to do that.
Gentlemen, thank you. I'm sorry, Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Danko, I'd like to make a comment to you because I, having been here these months and sitting through the various micromanaging bills that we have, this, I think, is an example of a situation where, you know, you're speaking and you're saying that you don't think this bill is necessary, but obviously there's a certain group of citizens that think it is. And we are elected representatives to speak for the citizens, and we're about to pass this bill. And if the regulatory agency had been responsive to a market situation that may be temporary in that markets are low right now and had adjusted administrative rules to be user-friendly during a period of time, then we as a legislature may not have been called upon to pass a bill which will now become statute that may not have had to have been statute had there been some flexibility for a period of time until the markets were to return. And so here we are called upon to use a broad brush approach and pass a state statute that may have been able to be handled had the agency been responsive to the needs of those people that are involved. And I would like to say that my understanding of what our responsibility is relating to conservation, it's not conservation at any cost. It's conservation in the best interests of the people. And I have seen many instances where DEQ has been making changes to be more responsive to circumstances. And I'm very grateful that that's happening. I think that could have been done here. And I just would hope that as you contemplate this personally, to say, you know, maybe there was a reason why this bill came forward and maybe it didn't have to, but to merely say, I don't think there's a reason for it when you have producers, people that pay the taxes, that pay the public servants, that are saying we're being strapped by a circumstance that we can't deal with, and to say that we put crushed glass in a hole and then got it out before we got a ticket is to express fear of the government instead of working and feeling that the government's working with them. And that kind of fear is something that I think is difficult to justify, and it adds to the ongoing problem that we have in Oregon of trying to get businesses to come here when they are afraid of not being able to get permits because of wetland rules, or not being able to qualify because 97% of the property outside of urban growth boundaries is EFU, and there's all kinds of regulations, and also not being able to get rid of your glass. I mean, why should the legislature have to constantly be fighting to try and overcome the resistance of our agencies to work with the people in a way that will help everything to flow through instead of being so rigidly adhering to a concept like conservation at any cost? All it will take is more money because there is a market out there. I just think that that's not in the best interest of our state. We have the highest unemployment rate. We can't bring in sufficient numbers of businesses here, and all of these things, I think, are kind of a flaw, philosophical viewpoint that needs to be shifted somewhat so that government becomes more user-friendly. And I know that you're not going to change that yourself, but I just wanted to express that because this bill is kind of a representation of something that's an ongoing problem. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I do want to remind my good colleague from Southern Oregon that the testimony on the part of the people who brought this bill is that they were very satisfied with working with DEQ, and that their view was in their testimony just a few moments ago that DEQ worked with them, and that they believe the problem here is that DEQ was not giving them the solution they wanted because DEQ was not able to give them the solution they wanted because of the law itself. And I'm not sure this is a problem with DEQ and their non-responsive. I think DEQ, in my impression, tries to work with the statutes and the rules they have, and it is proper for the proponents to say we worked very well with DEQ, we believe they're stopped by the statute, and we're here to ask for a change in statute. That seems to me the way the system's supposed to work, and I really do want to know what that testimony is, and if Paul comes back up, I'd like to hear him reiterate that. That's, in fact, his view.
Just one final comment on that.
Representative?
I think it was also mentioned, though, that the interpretation of the administrative and implementing the administrative rules were maybe a little bit extreme here. And certainly if I'm working with an agency that has tremendous control over me, I'm going to be very careful to try not to offend them, because there is future relationships and future opportunities.
Darn right.
Me too.
Thank you, John.
We're already into this bill 45 minutes. Kristen, Mitchell, and Paul, do you want to come up to rebut at all, or it's up to you? Oh, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kristen Mitchell with the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. Our members are the people that pick up your garbage and recyclables, take the materials to transfer stations or material recovery facilities. A material recovery facility, or a MRF, would be a place where they take the recyclable materials and they separate them into different types of materials to ship them on to end users for reuse. We also represent the landfills of this state, so we have a pretty broad mix of people, and we represent most of the members that operate in most of your communities across the state. There were just a couple questions I think that were raised that might be helpful for background purposes of understanding a little bit more about this. In one of the representatives asked, you know, why do we do this at all? And the reason that we do this is in 1991, this legislature passed an Opportunity to Recycle Act that required communities over 4,000 to put in curbside collection programs that would be same-day service of picking up recyclables the same day they picked up your garbage. So 95% of the communities in this state have those types of programs. The other 5% have programs that are acceptable to the Environmental Quality Commission. That's the reason that the programs are in place originally. We have goals that we're aiming to reach, which is 45% recovery of waste from the waste stream by the year 2005, and 50% by the year 2009, when the legislature passed that originally in 1991. They wanted to meet that goal by the year 2000. But we're getting there. We were at 46% last year. In addition to the requirements on the collection, and there are also requirements on the manufacture and for glass, for plastic, and for newsprint. And in those three areas, those producers are required to meet certain recycled content in their materials. If they don't have the amount of recycled content that they are supposed to have in those materials, then they may be subject to sanctions or problems with the DEQ. And this is all a part of trying to close the loop. Therefore, you recycle it, we pick it up and take it someplace, and then they put it back into a product that then is purchased again. So the theory is that you've got to continue that type of development to keep it going. Otherwise, you're just collecting it and stockpiling it. When you ask about whether there is a place for these materials to go, the answer is yes, but as is different in recycling markets versus other market concepts, it's not always that they pay you to take it there, it's that you have a place to take it. Because recycling is a real commodities market, so the prices go up and down on a big swing, and they've been in the tank for a while. But the programs don't get to end because the markets are in a tank. We're still under requirements to provide those services and pick up those materials, and we've done the best that we can within the 10 years that I've worked for this association. We've dealt with a lot of change, and when you originally passed this law, we originally started working in it. We separated everything at the curb. We had trucks that had tons of different little containers, which worked for a while, but as more and more people recycled more and more stuff, we realized that we couldn't get trucks long enough to get down the streets to get all these materials in these different containers. So what we've done is we've followed the trend of other communities and other states, and we've moved more to commingling, which also allows us to change trucks that have trucks that can pick up with an automated arm, so we avoid on workers' comp costs and we can do more stops more efficiently. So we combine more of the recycled materials into a large cart, and then in a number of communities we have glass in a separate container on the side, which is often commingled into three different colors, which was one of the questions that you were interested in, Representative Greenlick. There are some communities that have taken glass off curbside. To my knowledge, I know of only two. One is Grants Pass. The second is Newburgh. And in both of those cases, as Mr. Danko described, they took glass off the curb, they maintained depots for the collection of glass, and then they added more materials that they could pick up curbside so they could increase their numbers. So that's one of the ways that we've tried to deal with change and tried to continue to maintain and keep our costs down and get more materials up in order to meet the goals. the markets and the changes in the markets are a reason why we can have trouble stopping and starting programs. So for us, we'd like to see more flexibility in things such as glass. I mean, glass is a mixed bag for us. It is difficult to pick up curbside. It does cause problems in equipment. The markets, while they are there, there is a cost related to them. In a number of communities, we have used alternative solutions that we've worked with the DEQ to do, and we've found them to be pretty responsive. It's never a perfect relationship when you're trying to kind of change things, and they want to make sure that you continue to hold the line and collect these materials, and we understand their goal. We work through a solid waste advisory committee that I think is a pretty good place to deal with solutions like this. If there's a question on something like this, that might be a place to take something and say, what kind of solutions can we come up with? I think it's a representative group that does a good job of interpreting the rules. And we have had flexibility with the EQC. We have been able to use this material in road base. We have been able to use it in not quite tiling, but in similar things within our areas of the landfill or in other projects. In Bend, for example, the glass that goes that Mr. Patch was talking about, he takes it to the landfill, but it's not landfilled. We have our member there has a hammer mill that crushes it, and they stockpile it, and at the cost of $25 a ton versus disposing of it in the landfill would be $40. And the current goal is to hopefully be able to use that in road-based operations in Deschutes County in the landfill. As they do some expansion, there'll be some road-based they'll need to build, and if they can't do that, there is another market for that crushed commingled glass, or just commingled. It's called Strategic Materials. It's in Portland, but there's a tip fee related to that. They don't get paid to take it there. They have to pay $10 a ton to drop it off. So there are some choices out there. I can tell you more about what happens in other communities if you want, but I just wanted to give you some background information that might be helpful while you consider this. Be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Representative
Roosevelt. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Ackerman asked, why shouldn't the market just determine what happens? And I guess your testimony raises that question, too, because if that is the way we're looking at it, and it's cheaper just to take it to a landfill, even though there is a market for it, or it's cheaper and easier, then don't we run the risk of that happening simply because it's an option?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I think that the market issue is an issue. I don't believe that the market was a real driving consideration, although I wasn't here in 1991. I don't think that was the whole basis for it. I think recycling in Oregon is kind of equated with motherhood and apple pie. It's a community value, and people have paid for those programs through their communities, and frankly, pretty willingly, in order to be able to collect these materials. So that is one of the reasons that our industry is sensitive to it, because while we recognize it can be a difficult and somewhat expensive material to collect, we also recognize that our citizens have been willing to pay for those services, for that collection, for those materials to go out, and that can be important to local governments. Now, it depends on where you are. I think when Mr. Romaine read the article out of the Medford Mill Tribune, the further you get away from the Portland market where you have Owens Brockway or where you have Strategic Materials and you can get that material up there, the more difficult it becomes, and they are more likely to say, why can't we do alternative things? But I don't know if alternative things, even in those communities, would be places where there's preferred choice would be landfills, and I don't think that's the preferred choice of the proponents of this bill either.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
thanks.
Paul, can I just ask if she favors this bill or opposes it?
I was going to ask you the same question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, thank you. Actually, at this point, I would say that we are neutral on the bill in the form that it's in. We'd be happy to participate in it. I apologize for not being able to take a firm position on it, but we are a little conflicted about the whole process, and we in the past have worked pretty well through the SWAC, and if the suggestion is to make changes on the Senate side that would make some corrections, we'd be happy to participate in that process.
Thank you. Mr. Romaine, if you could keep it brief, we need to get
Chair, members of the committee, it's as you know, it's always difficult for me to keep anything brief, but I will make the attempt. I know you have to. Are you going to throw it at me, or are you just using it?
No, it's good.
He's prepared.
I'm always reminded when I listen to Bob Danko's testimony from DEQ, I'm reminded of the movie The Great Race with Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon and Natalie Wood. There's a scene on the iceberg where the car is stranded on an iceberg and the iceberg's melting. And Tony Curtis, who's all dressed in white, is the hero, and he comes up, and he comes up to Jack Lemmon, who's the Simon Legree character, and he says to him, "Now, don't say anything. But the iceberg's melting, and we're going to be drowned out here. But don't say anything. Don't upset the girl." And Jack Lemmon looks at him and says, "I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. But when the water gets up to here, I'm sure as heck going to say something." That's the problem right now, is the water's getting up to here, and you know, we're just trying to bring a problem out there. It's not a perfect solution. We agree with this, that the bill is not a perfect solution. We know what we have to do to get it out of the Senate, just from a political standpoint. We will work with people to try and craft some kind of priority on where you can use it. But the problem we have right now is actually both Representative Richardson and Representative Greenlich are right. DEQ is good to work with. They believe they are. Their interpretation is different than what I would give as a more flexible interpretation, but they're very good to work with. We have tried to work with them. The use of cullet in roads, we're talking about roads inside a landfill. Well, there's not too many roads like that. So we need to make sure there is a greater way for us to either use this stuff somehow or just get rid of the stuff, if that's the case. And if that happens to be the situation in Oregon, that it's not being used because there's too much of it, then, you know, we're at the emperor's has no clothes on situation. Guys, somebody's got to say it at some point. Sorry, we have to be the bad guy at this point, but we would love to be able to reuse it. I brought Mr. Fletcher up here to just give you some correct numbers on what we get, just for the record, on this, so you have the correct information. And then I'd be happy to answer any questions or sit down. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and other committee members, for the year currently, we are receiving for flint glass, which is clear glass, $40 a ton. Amber glass, which is beer glass, $25 a ton. And green glass, $5 a ton. Those are our current market prices for that. And I also think it's important to stop and realize that we're talking probably about the most inert item that you could put into a landfill. Glass is made of sand. It's going to go back to sand. It is not a contaminant to go into landfills. In fact, I'm certainly not a geologist, but it seems like it might even be good food. But it's so inert. It's not like the other recyclables that we're talking about. And we're not, and it's not, believe me, it's not a concern about the dollars at this point, though they are a little extreme. And to give you an example of that, if we mix our glass for 2002 averaged about $22.80 a ton when you mix in the green, the brown, and the clear. Just for pickup and processing of glass at our facility, it costs us $40.08 a ton. If you add in all the overhead, the entire facility, and everything that goes with it, we're talking just under $70 a ton it costs us to take care of glass. So we're doing that. I mean, we're doing our part in this, but it still gets down to the fact that if something goes sideways in Northeast Portland, it's not a pretty picture for us with the volumes we do. We have to have an alternative.
What Mr. Fletcher was referring to in Northeast Portland is the Owens glass plant. There used to be a number of active breweries, major breweries up in the Northwest. Now, we just lost the Miller, which was the Olympia, which was whatever, but it's now closed. At what point does the glass manufacturing community say we don't need a plant here to take care of the needs? If that goes, if Owens goes, it's John Fletcher's worst nightmare. He basically wakes up every morning looking at the business section going, "Oh God, what happens if this goes?"
Okay, so, gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Anyone else wish to briefly comment? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3637 and open a work session on House Bill 3637. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3637 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Richardson has moved House Bill 3637 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, it would be great if this bill were in a form that everybody could support it, and unfortunately, I realize the time doesn't allow that, but if I were to tell my constituents that I was supporting a bill that allowed for recyclables to be dumped into landfills, I think they would be very displeased with me, and so for that reason, I have to acknowledge them and vote no on this today.
Mr. Chair. Representative Greenlee.
I find myself in the same position apparently other people have noted. I am very perplexed with this bill. I am not certain where I'm going, but I am going to join what I assume is a minority and vote yes, moving it out of committee. I will continue to contact other people between now and the floor vote, and will make my decision on the floor vote later. But it's more than a courtesy yes. I have a suspicion that this is necessary, but I am worried about not the public relations, but the public policy implications of it.
Representative Doyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I liken this, instead of using a fly swatter to kill a fly, that we're trying to use a cannon to kill a fly. There's no doubt the market's depressed. Our economy is depressed, and we're getting more news of that today in other committees as well. I'm troubled that we see a proposal here to basically gut the recycling system. I see a proposal that could very easily have been written that it would be only for a short-term period that could have been adjusted later on. I see that this basically is just opening up, I think, to that question that we, everyone in Oregon will be asking themselves: when I'm separating my recyclables, do I know where it's going to go? And we don't know that with this change in law. So my concern is that this isn't just a method to ride the storm for a short period of time, but it is now to just make glass completely exempt. And it's, to me, it is an issue of conservation that Oregonians have embraced and have supported. And we're just telling the citizens of Oregon that here's just one thing that again, you don't have to trust your government with. So I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Ackland.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think this bill illustrates a fundamental principle that I've learned. That is, the shorter the bill, the greater the complexities. And but actually, to the merits of this, I understand the policy should be to encourage recycling. However, if the market is not conducive to that, I'm wondering where the product is going to end up. I don't have too much difficulty explaining to my constituents that maybe we have to, in a poor market situation, adopt the policy of this bill rather than to encourage illegal dumping somewhere. So I think that's an explainable proposition. I thought it's also explainable that DEQ would continue to work to determine alternate uses of recyclable materials, such as has been brought out here today. So I don't think the recycling effort is either gutted or killed by this bill. I think it just gives us more flexibility in these difficult economic times. So I will vote yes.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Freeman.
Yes.
Representative Doyle.
No.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3637 is passed with a do-pass recommendation. Representative Richardson, would you like to carry? Representative Richardson will carry. And we will, committee, we're already, this is the last meeting we're going to have. So we have two bills left. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2614. And we have an amendment to that. Representative Zahner, did you want to, we're in work session, discuss the amendment?
Well, we've gone through the amendment, and I don't want to take a lot of time in testimony. I do want to say yesterday, because of your health situations. I visited with everybody in our committee except Representative Rosenbaum, who I couldn't catch down on the floor because she wasn't there. And I want to commend Representative Greenlich and Representative Ackerman. Rather than have you called out of the hospital where you were yesterday, they were willing to try to discuss some of the options to try to make things work to move this bill one way or another. And I don't need those votes now, or I may need those votes.
You may actually.
The point is, that doesn't always work in this system, especially I recount back to one of the bills that Mr. Ackerman, Representative Ackerman, was particularly interested in, that annexation bill. And we passed it through here, and then it got called because I was a carrier. But the politics that were involved in that bill really, in my opinion, didn't have anything to do with that bill. And that's what happens in this building, and it becomes frustrating. So I want to thank these two representatives for considering and discussing the possibility that you may need some help because of your health problem.
Yeah, I said rather than, that I was a no vote, but rather than vote no, rather than haul you out of the hospital to get your yes vote, I would exercise your vote in absentia.
Thank you, Representative.
But now you're on your own.
Oh, okay. I happen to share Representative Zauner's feeling about House Bill 3211, which was the annexation bill. I share your same concerns at the fact that a good bill got politically derailed. But I guess it shouldn't come as a surprise, considering where we are.
Probably the point of information on that, then, because I was very disturbed that a bill gets passed out of this committee with a due pass recommendation, and it's referred back to us, and yet has not hit our agenda. The administrator's not here, but I was going to ask if we, you know, as a point of information on that issue, could we suspend the rules, and would that be appropriate at this time, and go into a work session on that double annexation bill? There's decent guidance on that. It's just a point of inquiry right now.
I don't know where our committee got the rules.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would be very uncomfortable with entertaining a rule suspension to waive public notice on something when we're still on 24-hour notice. And I would think the chief clerk would have an even bigger problem with that.
Yeah, probably would. I think we are in the 1 hour.
Are we notice. In 1 hour notice now?
In this week we are. I'm getting nods, yes.
Somebody help me. Which bill are we talking about?
We haven't even given 1 hour notice, though. I mean, if we were to suspend the rules, we would be waiving any notice.
No, but we could have a committee meeting tomorrow morning to discuss 3211 if there was enough support on the committee to do so.
Not on our agenda.
Anyone else have feelings that we could call ourselves back in tomorrow?
I'm not sure what we're talking about.
If the speaker would approve that, so we are subject to that point.
Yeah, I didn't hear the last part of your suggestion, Mr. Chairman.
We could call ourselves in tomorrow morning very briefly, in that we are at the 1 hour notice. But everything is, all the agendas are approved by the speaker, so we would still face that.
Would that take a rule suspension, or would that take action of the chair and try to find out how do we get there? What would be our procedure?
Yeah, I think we would have to, because it's been referred back to the committee. So the chair would be open to any of the other members' feelings on this. Maybe later this afternoon after the floor session or something, I can touch base with each of you and see how you feel on it.
Well, I could just make the motion, Mr. Chair, to clear the issue rather than have you have to come get back to us on this.
We'd have to do it after this bill, probably.
I'll wait for the motion.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on 2614?
Well, I hadn't heard any discussion on it, actually.
Oh, Representative Rosenbaum, that's the Woodburn part that we want to, the city would like to bring in some property and next to Winco there. One farmer owns. There's a map in your in your, and then you heard other people testify that didn't want it also, right. And nothing's changed. That's,
okay. And I did, there is some, Mr. Chair, there is a new report that was put in front of us today that I was just looking at, which seems to be a study by a consultant, and in it it says the consulting team recommendation does not include any land outside of the existing UGB because the data does not indicate a need in the foreseeable future. So I'm wondering if Representative Zahner has any response to that report.
I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's not what the city says. I mean, that's a consulting firm, wherever they may. I just saw it this morning, so I have no comment on it.
Okay.
Is there a motion?
Yeah. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2614 and open a work session on House Bill 2899. Now, it's my understanding the committee considered the amendments yesterday. There are dash-3 amendments on the...
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Chair, the committee adopted the dash-3 amendments on the 13th of May. Therefore, the bill before you is what was previously known as the dash-3 amendments.
Mr. Chair,
can I make a motion?
I would like to move House Bill 2899 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 2899 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Oh, it does have a referral?
Mr. Chair, we have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, could I change that motion?
Representative Zahner will amend his motion.
I would love to amend my motion, House Bill 2899 as amended, go to Ways and Means.
With the due pass
recommendation.
Okay. Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 2899 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Brewer.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Excused.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Gerard.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2899A is moved to Ways and Means as amended.
Okay.
We'll reopen the work session on House Bill 2614. Representative Zahner.
Yes, I would like to move... House Bill, or the amendments, -4 amendments, House Bill 2614.
-5, isn't it, Chris?
-5
amendments?
-5. Let me look to make sure we got the right one.
Would you like to amend your motion?
Yes, I would like to amend my motion to move the -5 amendments to 2614.
Okay, Representative Zahner has moved the -5 amendments to House Bill 2614. Any discussion? Seeing none, any opposition?
Yes.
Okay, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Greenland.
No.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative
Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Gerard.
Chair votes aye. The -5 amendments have been adopted to House Bill 2614. Representative Zahner.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2614 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zahner moves House Bill 2614 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Brewer.
No.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative
Backerman. I vote aye to move the bill to the House floor with reservations.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Gerard.
And chair votes aye.
Mr. Chair, could we put this on the consent calendar?
No. I don't.
Mr. Chair, that would be against rules.
House Bill 2614, as amended, is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and Representative Zauner will carry the bill. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2614. Committee, it's our last meeting, and I would just like to briefly state how very honored I have been to be a part of this committee. Well, I don't have a lot of great experience as a chair of a committee. This is by far the finest committee that I've ever been on in my five sessions and so forth and so on.
Considering the obstacles that you
have. I thank you all. You are just simply outstanding legislators, and I'm just very proud of this committee. And we have moved our dinner, by the way, to June 4th, and we'll get all the information out to you on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, nothing is easy in this committee, you know, in land use and stuff. Transportation's a whole lot easier, and Representative Greenlick will agree with that. But because of all the different issues, environmental, nothing's really easy.
Since you're on both committees, I find it particularly complex.
Well, I'll solve that.
I
do want his question answered and how we're going to resolve.
Representative,
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion, and that is that the committee suspend its rules and set for work session for tomorrow on House Bill 3211, which was previously referred back from the House to this committee. And I'd like to speak to the motion. If I may just state by reiteration, and speaking to the motion to suspend the rules. This bill, of course, was passed out with a do-pass recommendation. It was referred back to committee. I attempted to find out on the House floor why this was occurring. The carrier of the motion, Mr. Representative Zauner, did not know. The chief sponsor of the motion, Representative Westland, just looked at me and said it's a good bill. I just think there's a question of process here is when we pass out a bill. I don't mind it coming back if it has even an arguable or a culpable reason to come back, but the fact is it's never come back to this committee for any further reworking, amendments, or instructions from any source. So I see there's a blank record out there, and I feel if we're going to participate in any democratic process that we should reconsider this bill in a work session tomorrow, as was directed by the motion on the House floor.
Representative Ackerman has moved that we suspend the rules to reconsider the vote on House Bill 3211. Representative Brown?
Well, and when Representative Ackerman and I discussed that yesterday, I tried to also find out, and that's why I made the comment. Sometimes things happen in this building that really don't have a damn thing to do with the bill at hand, and I sense that's what's going on there, and I would certainly like to agree with Representative Ackerman, and I wouldn't mind trying to find out what's happening there.
I'm just a rookie, but my assumption is that it was sent back to die because it didn't have the votes on the floor.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
just clarify, Representative Ackerman, are you moving reconsideration right now, or are you just suggesting that we do this in a meeting tomorrow?
I think we have to go through a rule suspension
in order
because
to
the bill is not on today's agenda for either a public hearing or work session, so I don't think I can work off of that dimension. I have to suspend the rules and bring it on for a work session and then move that it be re-referred to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation.
And is that your intent if this motion passes? Well, Mr. Chair, if that's the intent, I can't support a rule suspension because I think, you know, I appreciate the frustration, but if we're talking about a democratic process and we have rules that we operate under and we've given no notice that we were going to do this today, I really, I would much prefer the resolution that you suggested of trying to have an additional meeting after proper notice and deal with it then, but I can't agree to just waive all notice.
Would you like to move your motion, Representative?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to remove your motion?
No, I think the committee should vote on the motion. That's my intent.
I have the same issue, Mr. Chair. I think it's a real problem hearing a bill without notice.
Well, it wasn't on the agenda, today's agenda, so I'm not sure we could.
Mr. Chair, the motion on the table is to suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering a bill. in order to, the first thing that the committee needs to deal with, Mr. Chair, is the motion on table for rule suspension. It takes five aye votes of the seven people assigned to committee to suspend the rules. So with that is the issue that needs to be dealt with first, is suspension of rules. Barring the five aye votes to suspend rules, there's nothing that can be done. Once the rule suspension is taken up before the committee, if the rule suspension goes through, then the committee moves for reconsideration of the vote by which House Bill 3211 was originally sent to the floor. If that motion is supported by aye votes by the committee, then the bill is before the committee as if it was never heard before. It cannot be heard today because there was no notice given. But since 24-hour notice has been suspended, I believe, and I'll double check on that.
Well, even 1 hour.
Yeah. Oh, can I ask you a question when you're done? Go ahead, finish.
Then the bill could be heard tomorrow. If 24-hour notice hasn't been suspended, the bill could be heard tomorrow at some time certain after the motions are complete. So that's from the parliamentary stand.
Mr. Chair, I'm not following this at all, because if we held another hearing, we could satisfy the notice, and we wouldn't need to do a rule suspension at all today. So the whole purpose of doing a rule suspension would be to deal with, to do something that I don't think the rules allow anyway.
Bill originally. Okay, well, what the...
Can I ask, if we vote right now on his amendment and it goes down, which obviously it will unless somebody changes their mind, it's dead forever?
No.
I'll be brought up
another chance.
Mr. Chair, Representative's honor, the motion on the table is a motion to suspend the rules. That is the only motion on the table.
Okay.
There is no other motion that exists currently.
Okay.
Regardless of what happens to the motion right now, the committee can publish a notice for tomorrow to hear the bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if that's what we ought to do, I'd be there. I don't want to suspend it. We don't have.
Well, we have a motion before us.
Okay, we. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the Representative Ackerman has moved that we suspend the rules to reconsider House Bill 3211. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Greenland.
No.
Representative Doyle.
Excused.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
No.
Chair Garrard.
Chair votes aye. Motion is failed. What we will do is we'll try and meet tomorrow. I'm not sure we'll have to. You see if you can find us a room. I know this room's going to be busy.
Mr. Chair, we will find a room for a meeting tomorrow that meets whichever the applicable notice requirements, so the committee can do the final business that it needs to do.
The earlier the better in the day.
What time is transportation still?
Mr. Chair, a lot of members of the committee, a lot of things need to be coordinated. You have four times the individual meetings that you all have, so we'll go ahead and facilitate whatever needs to be done for committee members.
No.
To
get ahead. I don't know.
A room on the fourth floor.
Of course, that's 10:30.
Is the committee okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I favor that bill. I don't mean if I'm hearing it.
Okay, we'll
double annexation.
We'll leave it up to our administrator then to schedule us as early as he can tomorrow morning.
Something to do.
And we'll consider the bill at that time.
If we're in 1 hour notice, I definitely prefer 8 o'clock, so it'll be before.
Well,
before transportation, if that's easy.
Yeah, and I have business, so okay. We'll adjourn the House Committee on Environment and Land Use.